KRVN.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the channel Final Bell on the Rural Radio Network. I'm Susan Littlefield. A day of markets that saw some higher pushes on the grain side. While the struggle definitely was happening within the livestock complex, a lot of red on the screen. We're going to dive into what's happening in these markets, including the talk about China when it comes to grains. And Sean Hackett joins us. Sean is with Hackett Financial Advisors. And I think we need to start there. First of all, we saw a bit of numbers come in that there were some purchases made right o'clock during the 8 o'clock hour that was announced. But then we hear the rumors that China's wanting to do some grain purchases, and that included coming from the United States.
Yeah, I mean, look, they were on a vacation for their year-end holiday. They took a pause. People panicked because their stock market crashed, thinking that their demographic slide into economic perpetuity was in place, that their crashing real estate market was going to mean they're going to be offline. And we don't believe any of that. We think they're going to come back and be large buyers, which is interesting. We know Brazil's crops are going to be well below what they were a year ago. And if you look at how much the Brazilians increased exports of corn and soybean, exactly the amount that we lost last year. So we feel that our exports are going to be up substantially in the upcoming season because of those lower crops in Brazil. But China certainly understands that, and I think some of the purchases we might be seeing from them is they want to keep that door open because they know they're not going to be able to get everything that they need from Brazil this coming season. They'll need the U.S. whether they like it or not.
And that kind of is a hard political pill, I think, for them to swallow at this point.
It is, but when it comes to feeding 1.5 billion people or not, 1.5 billion people come first. They'll worry about how they're viewed in the international scene later, but buying food from the U.S., as much as they dislike it politically, they know they don't have a choice.
Well, I know the soybeans were kind of pushing their 20-day moving average at one point as well in the trade today.
Yeah, I mean, look, we're starting to see the speculative shorts maybe getting a little uncomfortable here. It's a new start to the month. We're moving into the planting season here shortly in the U.S. We're done with, or we're getting it past harvest pressure season in Brazil for soybean harvest. A lot of things, you know, suggesting that the funds probably are getting uncomfortable. We're seeing the dollar starting to roll over and weaken here a little bit. Things like gold and crude oil pushing to new highs. I just think they are starting to feel that they may need to get themselves less exposed to the growing season in Northern Hemisphere. Obviously, you know, is not likely to turn out as perfect as everyone is suggesting.
So we had Commodity Classic, obviously, last week. And Sean, as I had the opportunity to talk to some of the growers, many of them had made, especially one gentleman said, he feels like we're putting too many eggs in one basket when it comes to a corn perspective. When you look at, you know, we all know the delay to 2025 when it comes to year-round of the E15, but then also the aviation fuel. And that was discussed on Friday by Ag Secretary Vilsack during the general session. But he feels like corn is just kind of dumping them all into that one spot with the hopes that that'll be the big turnaround for this market. What's your takeaway?
Well, unfortunately, it seems that the powers that be have determined that renewable fuel, green fuel, however, whatever you want to call it, is not politically popular for votes. Whether that's right or wrong or indifferent, it just seems like everybody wants to kick the can down the road until after the elections to make strong movements for supporting greater usage and greater demand for ethanol or renewable diesel and such. And so, unfortunately, if we're looking for demand coming from green energy to help alleviate some of the oversupply worries, I don't think we're going to get that until after the elections. We're going to need something from China demand. We're going to need something from weather to turn this around. We're going to need something from geopolitics, something from currencies. I don't think the green energy is where we're going to get our bullish story from.
So what are we going to see? Other thing discussed that during Commodity Classic, Sean, was the fact that they feel like there might be an acreage war brewing. And it just seems like that's the same conversation we have every year beginning of March. But they feel like there's some bigger pressures out there, including what's happening in the cotton market and what we're just seeing in general across the whole grain complex.
Well, when you have a high cost of capital because of the high interest rates, and you have prices that are now, depending on what kind of cost reduction numbers you want to look at, are, you know, borderline covering everything, and you have banks that are looking at their loans and looking at them with a great reservation about ability to cover those loans. An expensive crop like corn to put down is not going to be a high priority, even though the U.S. likes to plant corn, meaning those marginal acres in the Dakotas and, you know, on the periphery that in recent years have been planted in corn because the prices have been good. I don't believe those acres are going to go for corn in a year that farmers, producers, bankers are going to be looking to conserve cash. I think they're going to go to things like soybeans, like cotton, like rice, things that have a better penciling out of margin and have a lower cost of putting the crop down. So I think this is the year, if we're ever going to lose acres in corn, this is the year that we could see it happen.
So then if you're talking losing acres in corn, where is it makeup-wise? Are we going to see a bigger push because we're looking at the global numbers? Is it because of the numbers coming out of Brazil? What are other influences that we might see then?
Well, I mean, I certainly think, you know, when you are looking out at the renewable diesel story, even though there's a lot of ambiguity in this election year, I mean, the prospect for greater domestic demand for renewable diesel is outstanding, and we do need more acres in soybeans to handle that demand. And I think the market's going to get much more comfortable in relying on domestic demand than worrying about when is China going to come in or not come in for our soybeans, because soybeans are the most sensitive and vulnerable to the whims of China buying or not buying. And so I just think that, you know, with that and the fact that Brazil is going to be exporting considerably less, you know, the prospects for soybeans being a much lower cost crop to put down.
But more is coming up. It's the Channel Final Bell on the
Product placement is something we're proud of at the Advanced Channel Seed brand. Here's Channel Seed Pro Grant Bailey from Norton, Kansas.
You get down to the small areas, you know, of where these products need to be placed and picked in. And I feel like that's been a very strong point of Channel, is we have a good group of leadership that chooses the right products for the right area, not just a broad one-size-fits-all.
Rise to the challenge this season with the Enhanced Channel Seed brand. Read and follow pesticide label directions, IRM, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Welcome back to the Channel Final Bell on the Rural Radio Network. I'm Susan Littlefield. As our conversation does continue with Sean Hackett, he's with Hackett Financial Advisors. So we talk so much about weather, obviously in South America, and then just earlier we were talking about the acreage war that's going to take place here in the U.S., but how much of that could be affected by weather? What are you seeing as a summer weather prospect out there?
Well, one of the things that's been saving the U.S. crops in the last 4 years, despite a lot of dry weather, is that we haven't had extreme high heat where it counts during that core June 23rd to August 15th window. Just as an example, 2012, the last major drought that hurt yields substantially, we had 13 100-plus degree days in Des Moines, Iowa, as an example, and it was much worse outside of Iowa. You know how many 100-degree days we've had in the last 4 years? Two. So heat has been the missing ingredient. We feel this year it could be a very, very hot year during that core window where the yields are determined, and that if we have another year of below normal moisture with that kind of extreme higher heat potential, this could be the year that the genetics fall short in those areas that get that kind of weather. And the things that are telling us to be worried about it is this shift back to La Nina, the idea that we're at this four-year peak in the solar cycle, 11-year solar cycle, and the moon, 18.6 Earth-moon cycle, where the Earth wobbles 5 degrees, is at its maximum wobble right now, which has 1988 and 1934 were years that were at that same point. It has a history of being very, very hot during how that interacts. So all these cycles are kind of coming together to tell us that this year we could actually get the heat to really deliver, not in Texas where we know it's been super, super hot. I'm talking about in the core grain belt where, you know, crops have been able to survive on a little bit of rain because it's not been super hot. I think that's the big risk I would be watching for. Whether or not that ultimately materializes enough to create major crop problem, it should be at least enough to create a major rally that farmers can then, you know, cash sell into to generate better profits and income on the farm than they're currently seeing on their screens right now.
Livestock Side, and as always, I like to talk dairy with you. What are you seeing right now for this dairy industry?
What we're seeing is better global demand. We're seeing production continuing to be constricted, being flat to down globally in the U.S., continue to be down. The problem with Class 3, for example, is that, you know, Class 3 is driven by the price of cheese, and the last cold storage report did show sizable amount of cheese, meaning we're still, the milk that we are producing, we're still producing a disproportionate amount of cheese versus powder and other derivative milk products. We kind of need to move through that inventory so we can get on the other side of this. We think we will, but right now we're at peak production seasonally, and we're looking at the heifer shortage that's coming for dairy, meaning that there's just not going to be able to turn the spigots on if demand comes back later in the year, as we think it will. We may not be able to turn that milk spigot on like we've been accustomed to, given that we just don't have the heifers available to get the crop herd, you know, moving and the reproductive cycle moving higher again. So that's, you know, a problem short term in terms of getting through this overhang, but it does say that there's a brighter spot later in the year once we get through that overhang.
You know, it kind of sounds like the same story we're hearing on the beef side when it comes to heifer retention at this point.
Absolutely. It's a very similar story. It's really being driven by this, you know, contraction of the cattle herd. The problem I see with the cattle market short term is that, you know, we have run those beef cutout prices back up to the highs. I think consumer demand is going to pull back again like it did before. And now that we have this warmer weather and this cheaper feed, I think these weights are going to start to rise again like they had been before we had that cold snap in January. And that means that, you know, beef production, not by more animals, but heavier animals, is going to be a problem as we get into the spring. We might see the markets kind of a setback here before we can get ourselves, right-footed again.
All right. Well, what about from a consumer perspective? How much are they going to affect what we see with these prices?
Well, I think the consumer is going to continue to, you know, view any time that we see beef cutout or pork cutout prices down, that, you know, they're going to be value buyers, and I think they're going to be pulling back anytime those cutout prices start to rise. I think they're being very value conscious after all this inflation that they've had to endure over the last several years, and still the tremendous uncertainty over elections, geopolitics. I think everyone is just not wanting to chase high prices.
Good. Sean, what's the best way for folks to get a hold of you?
Our website is Hackett, Hackett advisors.com. We also have a Twitter page at Feridex, Feridex 11, where we have information and interviews and posts that go over more about how we look at agriculture to see what we're looking at might be of value to those that watch and listen to your show.
All right, that is today's Channel Final Bell. Just a reminder, commodity futures and options do involve a substantial risk of loss, not suitable to all investors. And that's the Channel Final Bell on the Rural Radio Network.